Love it. Yes! What a big night it is tonight. The best and the worst. And the panel we have assembled is truly the best, because it is the best and the worst in the year, nay, the decade in the world of cinema. And firstly, let me introduce the man. We wouldn't do the show if he wasn't here. He has been a rock in the party show history of cinema. His opinions cannot be bought. They can be rented. They cannot be bought.
They can be bid on eBay.
They can be autographed.
PayPal accepted.
PayPal. You have? Are you twittering?
Hedley, I am distracted tonight. I am twittering. My whole life is Twitter.
Before
my whole
you
life
speak,
is 150 words.
You cannot speak
characters
until you are introduced. The one, the only, Cecil B. DeHirsch.
Thank you. In surround clap. That's exactly what I want.
And you notice our new technology that we've got here?
No, Hedley, what is it?
The self-drying panel table that you can spill anything you want on.
Excellent. Well, I'll have to use that later as,
a prop.
Spill things.
And
Hedley, it's been a year and a half in the year of cinema.
Nay, a decade and a half, has it not?
Really?
Yeah, it's been 10 years.
Hang on, if we were the noughties,
yes,
what are we going to be in the tens?
That's an interesting question.
The teens,
says Dee Dee. Is it the teens? That sounds a bit lame.
Have you spoken to Barack Obama about that? Is that quality? Are you allowed to do that? That's what Copenhagen's
yes.
about. That's what we're doing at Copenhagen.
Because they achieved nothing else,
did they? We're recycling the noughties into the teens.
And just in 150 characters or less,
yes.
What sort of year has it been in the world of film?
It's been a pretty amazing year of film, because they've released at the end of the year the film that the American cinema is hopefully banking all their money on to save the world of cinema, and that is Avatar. So they've decided at the end of the decade, through the influence of basically the internet and all the other DVD land, all that big stuff, they're going, let's make a movie that you have to see at the movies, and let's really give a lot of money to the man who's made the biggest film of all time, being Titanic. Let's give James Cameron a shitload of money, $300 million, they're saying, to get people to go to the cinema.
That's really interesting, the way you've put that, because it is. It's the turn of the decade. They're being slaughtered. Well, let's ask the man who knows. The man with his finger on the pulse.
So I don't know?
You might know. But
you said I'm here.
You're looking at the critical content. We're now turning to the business side, and the man whose business is the business, with his finger on the pulse of the industry, the one, the only, consigliere to the stars, it's Consigliere Greg!
Hedley, thank you. Hey, and isn't it a great year for Australian cinema, where it's the international stars are no longer our Kate, where we've got Sam Worthington there.
Our Sam,
and the star of Alice in Wonderland.
Our
Mia Wasikowska.
Is it
that
Mia?
That Australian name.
Yes, our Mia.
And just a whole lot of new wave of Australian actors that are coming through in some of the big Hollywood films, and Sam Worthington's got about four of them. And also that
he's in Avatar, the aforementioned, he plays
both lead roles.
Does he?
Yep.
Well, let's touch on Cecil's point there. Is it an attempt by the cinema part of the film industry, the exhibition part of it, to reinvent themselves and not force, but cajole people into the cinema?
Hey, they're doing well. You know, box office is up 6% this year across the world, and 3D is now the sort of experience everyone wants to go, is bring people back to the cinema. DVD and television are trouble, but cinema is on fire.
How has it been received? Is it proper 3D, or is it the 1950s bullshit with the coloured glasses that really wasn't 3D?
No, you got a pretty good pair of glasses. They look like Ray-Bans.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And it looks really good.
You've seen
really
it?
Keen. Yeah.
You've seen it?
Excuse me, Hedley, fill in.
Yeah, while you're coughing, have you seen it, Greg?
Avatar? I haven't seen Avatar, but the other thing with, I mean, 3D's sort of the new wave of movies at the moment, but also digital cinema, which just means that now films can be distributed just so easily to all the cinema houses.
You don't need
prints. And the cost of prints is about $2,000 a print, and that's going to be prohibitive to a lot of the regional cinemas. When they all go digital, they'll just be able to be delivered down the line. And
it's like emailing a movie to the cinema.
Yeah, kind of.
And
I'm back now, Hedley.
Thank you. Is it happened, or is it happening, or is it about to happen?
I emailed you earlier. Gregor's doing it.
I'm asking Gregor.
No. No, it is.
Well, Dina, you and Hitler do the show. We'll go like the stalactites and have a schlama. What the hell's going on here?
Sorry. I apologise for that interruption.
No, it is, and it's just happening. It's like across the world, it's just rolling out, and it'll just change.
Is it here yet?
It is. And a lot of cinemas now have got their digital cinemas in the multiplexes, and it just means that a whole lot of more sessions can be made available, and when films start to perform really well, that they can take more sessions on, and it's a great innovation for it.
No need for prints?
Well, that'll be, I guess, is going to be the ultimate thing.
It'll be cinema formerly known of Prince.
And right now in this studio, we have the Prince of Cinema himself.
I'm coming on after that.
Yeah. Right. The human encyclopedia of all things 25 frames or less. 24 frames or less. I said all less.
It's the PAL speed up.
It is the PAL speed up. Australia's most loved New Zealander, if you don't count Darren Hinch.
Or Colette.
And now that Joe Bielke has passed.
Yeah, that's all the good ones.
Richard Wilkins.
Russell Crowe.
Bill Stalker, sadly gone.
Well, Australia's 20th most loved New Zealander. The one, the only, Mr. Tony Martin.
Yeah.
Very nice.
You're not worthy. You're not worthy.
No, sorry, I was the one who, already before we went to air, there were spilled drinks, which is always good on a radio panel.
Which is my
people can't hold their lime cordial.
Exclusive.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
But I've used already the first 100 pages of Leonard Maltin to mop it up. I'm up to a Boomerang with Eddie Murphy, as far as I've got.
Okay.
I did try and see the Avatar 3D, and I went to Baldwin Cinema, and there's no 3D. Well, they had a go at it, but they were doing it with Mrs. Caldecott's Cabbage War, so it was wasn't very exciting.
And do you have to wear two pairs of glasses?
I do. You have to put them on over your.
You put them over you. Yeah. So,
and then
2D and 3D, because that gives you 5D.
Yes,
it's spectacular.
So you've got to put glasses.
There's actually a side effect of this thing: is you put the glasses on, everything becomes around you, including the exit sign. They're right next to you.
So it's quite an experience there. So,
I haven't seen the 3D. I saw Up in 3D, which was really good.
And it works?
Yeah. Were you worried because of the glasses that it won't work?
No.
Do I have to get prescription 3D glasses? Do you have to go down to Village for a week before the film opens and the guy goes, left? Is that worse? Is that better?
As you come into the clinic.
What James Cameron has done with his version of 3D, he's actually not gone silly except for a couple of times where there's that classic bow and arrow thing. But the rest of the time, he does move it around and you do feel engaged in the film.
Well, we've talked on this show back in the early 90s.
Last millennium.
We did a 3D special on this panel, Hedley. I don't know if you remember. And we talked about House of Wax.
Right.
Or the first House of Wax, which, when it's shown on television, is bizarre because there's a two-minute bit where a bloke standing in the foyer of the cinema in the film has one of those paddles with a ball on it and just hits it at the camera for 2 minutes.
Why?
Well, on 3D, that looks amazing. But on television, 25 years later, it was just mystifying. And the bloke who directed it, one eye, couldn't see, never saw the 3D effect. Andre de Toth.
Fair dinkum.
My wife loves the House of Wax. She gets her legs done and then under your arms.
She's obviously asleep at this time of night, or Cecil wouldn't have been as brave.
And I'll be awake all night.
Yeah, I've never heard such bravery from you before, Cecil. Taking
Lady
your donuts.
Lady Cecil does have a small problem.
Yes. That is your gun.
And she call in.
Yeah, me.
That is.
We've got her on line four.
House of Wax was done a few years ago in Queensland.
That was in 2D.
That was a remake of...
Of a, 1953 one, made by a one-eyed man.
Really?
With Vincent Price.
So
correct.
Hang on, is this like deliberately trying to make a loss? They're making a 3D movie so they hired a one-eyed director.
That's right. That's exactly what they did. But in those days, you really tough film directors always had an eye patch. When you think back, I think to John Ford, Hathaway, I think he had one. Raoul Walsh, lots of them. Just wear them.
Well, House
of Strike Fear.
The one that they filmed in Queensland, House of Wax, the set actually burnt down.
Yes.
Well, that's what happens with wax.
Well, it wasn't.
It wasn't wax.
Correct.
And Tony, the other thing I must mention is I appreciate how virtually all year you've been sharpening your media game on a host of other programs before you came here.
Yeah, I don't have anything to plug. Almost the end of the year. Nothing to
those
plug.
Those who haven't read Tony's book, it's a sensation.
Yes.
Thank you, Seth.
Absolutely. Don't go to Borders, they charge an extra 10%. Everywhere else, go buy it.
Really?
Yep. Is that right?
And the name of the book is?
A Nest of Occasionals.
Correct.
There you go.
Yes, the first time I think I saw you was on Rove this year.
No, it was quite average.
And since then,
not
I think...
Not from their end, my end.
No.
The show's been acting up for
it. It was the first thing I did, and I didn't know which were the funny bits, and I chose the wrong bits.
And I saw you on ADBC this year.
Yeah. Knowing that with Sam Pang from Triple R's
Own. Exactly, although he won an award last week on the Golden Alex Best Set Design.
It's just
worse set design.
Right. Was it best or worse?
Worse.
So it won either best or worst set design.
No, it was worse set design.
And also, Hedley Sam Pang is now ex of Triple R.
Is he?
Mm.
He'll be back, but he's left the breakfast.
And Tony, you're doing
attention to detail.
Yes.
It was
somewhere in between.
I love extremes.
Most middling set design.
And that's what we're going to talk about. And Tony, for the decade, I've asked you to cast your mind to the decade of some of the... We're going to give the major awards later in the night, but just some of the howlers.
Oh, but bad ones.
Bad ones that have grabbed your attention over the last 10 years and this year.
The words boat trip have just... jumped into my head with Cuba Gooding Jr., but I'm sure there would have been worse.
Snakes on a plane.
Well, that sort of... I never even saw it in the end. There was just no... There felt like there was no need to go by the time it came out.
What do you think happens before it was made? What do you think happens on Snakes on a Plane?
The trailer was just... It jumped the shark after the trailer.
Was there a dance sequence?
I feel like at this point I should... You know, if I'm going to be sitting here bringing out bad films, I should mention two bad films that I've seen this year, one of which I was in and one of which Ed Cavalier was in, and I'm sure listeners here would know a film called Meat Pie, Australian film directed by Garnett May with Ostentatious, with Ed Cavalier adopting the name Highland Cavalier seriously in order to not be recognised in the credits. And looking, Cecil is looking just ass.
I'm stunned.
And it was made about 5 years ago, and it came out, hasn't come out here yet, but it's come out in America. I think you can only get it maybe on Amazon, and it's called No Longer Meat Pie, which was obviously some kind of American pie, Australian version of. It's now called Going Down Under, and it's on
you. Porno?
Virtually. In parts, yes. But with Gabby Milgate, so be careful.
Right.
But it's on YouTube in, like, you know, where they put a whole movie up in, like, 9 sections.
Yeah.
You can see it. So that's one Ed was in. And then I was in one called Guru Wayne, which Consuliere Sitch... Or may have not had anything. Was never there. Didn't see anything. Wasn't there, my lord. Had nothing to do with it.
I see nothing.
Certainly not to blame. And in no way implicated by the following statements. Now, this is a film...
No one
in this room worked on it except...
Any lawyer, living or dead, or...
It was made in 2001.
Just qualifying.
It came out on DVD in 2009.
Because it was had such a long cinema run?
At the starting price of $7.95
right.
At JB Hi-Fi. And I know I go on about this, but I think this is a good example of it. You know a film is good when three of the lead actors' names are spelt wrong on the front cover, including the title character. So there you go. Those, were, I think, are pretty bad. And so I was involved in one of them, and obviously someone I work with was involved in the other. So they're out on the table now.
Right.
We've got that out of our system.
Yes.
Is there anything anyone else on the
well,
table would like to...
Are we going to include Australian films in the worst films?
We're going to sort of divide it up between Australian films... Which
because it would be easier for us to name the films that are good and the rest are in the worst.
Yes, and commercial... the American commercial film industry... As Greg alluded to before, was in trouble until the last 12 months or so. Is that right? Is it because of the global financial crisis?
No, but the independent industry is still under a lot of pressure. Like the independent distribution companies in
You're
the States.
You're talking about America now, yeah.
Yeah, but things like the Paramount Vantage, Warner Independent, Fine Line, New Line, Miramax, they've all shut or in the process of shutting. And they were the companies that...
Shutting down?
Yeah, and they were the companies that distributed the art house films around the world.
How come? What, they're not making money?
Well, I think the studios have worked out that it's just... it's too risky again. The cost of distributing a film in the US has skyrocketed, and then the US has worked out that the franchise films are the ones that they will back. So we see Harry Potter 6 and Transformers 15.
Is that the trend that's going to happen?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's now a property business.
And
more and more.
And festivals this year, less films selling. I mean, I saw
there was a thing
serious report about Toronto. There was like a huge film with Bill Murray and Robert Duvall that nobody wanted to buy. It was quite good, apparently.
Yeah, and it's amazing.
Because they can't afford it?
Well, you can have these massively expensive films with huge casting, and then for the US distributors, that are looking at it thinking it's going to cost us almost as much to distribute as it costs to make them, and we don't know about it. So
there's a huge war at the moment between the cinema owners and people who run the cinemas and the distributors. The cinema has been around for a long time, and they fought off what was going to be the death of television. They fought off the death of video. And what's happening now is that the studios are now saying, we want to release DVD and online on the day of cinema. They want to do that all at the one time as a business model, and the cinemas are jacking up against that. And there's a big war, and that war is the one we're going to fight over the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, but I reckon the reason that a lot of the independent films are really struggling is that just the cost of promoting films at the moment is just so high.
A more aggressive approach from the art house films. Vera Drake, Rise of the Cobra, something like that. Slightly more Bruckenheimer approach to the Fox Searchlight output. No, sorry. Move on quickly.
Headley, the world in terms of the decade has changed, particularly in the concept of promoting films. What used to be very reliable was word of mouth, and word of mouth was generated by people obviously seeing them and critics being given the power to write about stuff. But the introduction of mobile phones and texting and Twitters and online has basically taken the power away from the critics into the hands of the people, which is fantastic. So word of mouth now happens literally on the day of release. People are saying the film's no good or good. And that world has completely changed.
And it's this year, Bruno was the first one that copped it from the Twitters.
What, they said it was no good?
Word just got out in 5 hours. And I remember I tried to go and see Bruno about 2 weeks after it opened. It wasn't on even at 10 o'clock in the morning at the Jam Factory on a Wednesday.
And then it goes the other way, where you get something like that Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
And it's... just come from nowhere. It's taken a massive amount of money. It's a dreadful film.
Mate, for I haven't seen it, but it's like 20 in another one of these Blair Witch style surveillance camera.
So is it all Twitter and the Facebook and the MySpace?
The people have the power now, where the studios and the critics who were part of that process used to have it. It's moved away from them now.
And so will marketers of films in the future try to get, you know, into that...
They do now. They do now.
But it's just so hard to capture it, you know, because how do you get...
Word gets out so quickly.
Yeah.
Do you remember, I was trying to explain to a young person recently how when I was a kid, The Sound of Music would run for a year and a half at a cinema. And it might take 6 months to come to your town. And then a film would come out and be a flop, and then word would get out, like Bonnie and Clyde was the classic example, came out again 8 months later and then was a hit for a year. And
when Crocodile Dundee came out, there were 80 films released in that year. Now there's about 400 to 500 films released. And that, when that was released, there was no video recorders, no...
So it was your only choice was the cinema.
Or Don Lane.
Unfortunately, the sort of the more upmarket, intelligent films the Americans used to make and still make, but not as many. That world has suffered. That the idea of making a sort of an intelligent film, inverted commas, now you're going out. It's Transformers. The other thing, the other price that has been paid is the value of stars. As Constantly Greg mentioned before, is now dropped. That is, that they used to have a tentpole film, put in big stars, pay them a lot of money, and people would go. Now they've realised we don't need the stars. Just make the big film. Put unknowns in and let the thing fly.
Okay, was the other thing the competition to film from things like we mentioned, the computer, all the other choices that there are, you know, 900 channels on TV or whatever it is, so many more choices than going to the theatre that didn't exist a while ago. Who is the theatre goer now?
But that doesn't explain the increase with box office being higher than ever and 6% up. it's still a unique experience. But it's the composition of the films that are taking the box office. At the moment, they're the properties of the Charlie's Angels 5 and all of these repeat well-known properties, rather than getting an original screenplay, which they're going to distribute, pay a lot of money, and just hope that an audience will come.
If you look at the American cinema per se, they are looking at people who will go to the movies straight away. That is, they'll release a film on Friday and go, and we'll hit them, and they'll do really well over a weekend and will for the next 2 or 3 weeks. Those people are young, under the age of, say, 25, with cash in their hands, willing to pay the $16 or $17. That's the audience they're going for. They react straight away. Because by the time you and I get to the movie, as Tony mentioned before, they're already gone.
But look at Twilight. Twilight just opened huge. 4 or 5 weeks later, it was down to nothing.
Because everyone who wants to see it has seen it, or because it's no good, or
done.
It's done. So that'll be the new trend.
Absolutely. They'll tell you by Friday lunchtime, the box office. They'll know straight up
whether it's worked or not.
Absolutely.
What you constantly hear film directors complaining about, and I don't know if this is true or not, is that the studios don't make what they call the mid-budget film anymore, because if you make a $16 million film, you're still going to have to spend, you know, $40 million to market it. So you don't get a film like, or you don't get like films like Sideways, sort of quite small budget films, but still quite commercial films, not quite Sundance films. You're not seeing the studio would rather make Rise of the Cobra than a $10 million film, which you would think would be easy to get money
for. And the idea about having an original idea is kind of gone. If you look at all of those movies that are out at the moment, in terms of this is the Hollywood mainstream cinema, they are usually sequels, adaptations from a TV series, or an adaptation from a book.
Well, that's
the idea about writing an original screenplay is really, really tough, unless you're lucky enough, like, say, Quentin Tarantino with Inglourious Basterds.
I mean, he's got a track record, so they can take a punt on him.
He's fallen off those rails a few times. He was very lucky.
But also, to Tony's point, that for those $40 million pictures, they were often financed by the studio's art house labels, and therefore closed, or many of them have closed, so the financing that would have come with it's not available anymore. So those, you know, films like Good Will Hunting and those, they're just harder to make now.
And will it be taken up by independent filmmakers using cheaper medium like video, and so that good stories will still get made, but there won't be
this Paranormal Activity that came out. Who was the company that, do we know the company that made that? Let's say it was 20th Century Fox, someone like that. They announced that they were going to be investing $1.5 million in developing something like 100 new really cheap films. So they figure, well, that's worked. $10,000 stationary camera surveillance horror film. Let's have 100 more of those.
So that's that's what's going to happen.
It's quite a flukish. Usually, when something like the Blair Witch Project or Paranormal Activity, which is separated by about like 10 years, when one of those comes along, it's just because it flukishly hits some kind of image that strikes a chord. That shot on the poster of the bedroom with the surveillance camera in it—you feel disturbed just looking at that. And that's striking a chord in a way that 500 previous quite cheap horror films have not, and have just disappeared.
Okay, well,
you know, they're not going to get 100 more Paranormal Activities for that $1.5 million.
Well, let's start with that as our first category. In the field of horror, the best and worst for the year and for the decade.
Horror. I don't see a lot of them.
The one that I would like to mention is Lake Mungo. That was a low-budget
Australian film
that's been picked up for remake by Paramount. And I saw that Paranormal Activity. I thought it was dreadful, but I thought Lake Mungo was great.
And Saw?
Headley, Constantly Greg, don't you think that's kind of almost offensive that the film isn't good enough to be on its own, that has to be remade?
Well, it did get released here.
Yeah, I find it culturally cringing that our films aren't good enough if they do well, if they have to be remade.
When I say it did 39,000 at the Australian box office, so it hasn't been a smashing success, but the concept of it is brilliant.
Let's talk about commercial in the world of horror. Is Saw far and away the most successful Australian film?
Australian creative. Australian creatives, yes, absolutely.
You don't want to call it an Australian film?
Well, no, because what happens is that the guys went to America and made the film there. So, I mean, it is an Australian film in my mind, but it wouldn't qualify for, say, an AFI.
Right.
But it's been created by Australians, but effectively been produced by Americans.
How did they get it produced by Americans?
They were very lucky. They went across to America and they sat around and pitched.
They made one scene of it themselves. They shot a sample of what it was going to look like.
And had a lucky break with a studio who wanted to hit it big, which was, you know, they got it going. It's a sensational story.
It's up to about saw six now.
Yeah. They're running out, clearly, of things to be sawn off.
Saw meets Rocky versus Predator.
That will probably happen. It will be Jigsaw versus somebody. Jigsaw Tyler Perry.
versus Black and Decker.
Freddy Krueger. Well, Freddy Krueger is already back, because I saw a shorts for a new Freddy Krueger with... that bloke who was the child molester in Little Children and then in Watchmen with a three-barreled name. He used to be in the Bad News Bears when he was a kid. Looks kind of weird. Now getting good parts.
Can't help you.
He was nominated for an Oscar. Jackie Earl something. It's a triple-barreled name.
Don't know. We'll get somebody to ring in and tell us.
He's the new Freddy Krueger. People out there will know what Jackie Earl Haley, is that maybe his name? Or is that... comment.
Somebody will Google for us.
Yeah, we'll get it Googled. Yes. And, all right, let's move to the field of comedy.
Ah, yeah.
Okay, best and worst for the year and the decade. Let's just run some names.
I'm going to hit the ball right out of the park straight up, because it is my favourite film of the year, The Hangover.
Yeah.
Absolutely killer film. It's not the best film of the year, but it made me laugh. And I don't think I've laughed for 10 years at the cinema.
Hangover.
Absolutely. The Hangover. You will love it.
Australian film?
American.
Who's in it?
Not so much big names, doesn't really matter.
Zach Galifianakis.
That's a big name.
Like it's a, like
that's
it's
a very big name.
Is that can now drive.
Is that your three-barrel name?
I hope it is. Jackie Earl, he would have been good. Someone from The Office is in it.
Okay.
The American Office.
Hangover.
That's it.
Yep.
That's why everyone leaned forward as you said that.
Helly, this is the story. Basically, it's based on a true story. A guy goes with his mates for his bucks night to Vegas, and things go wrong.
Awry.
And there are some scenes in Hangover that are just hilarious.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, I'll mark that one down. Is it? It's on now, is it?
DVD.
DVD, right.
When we do one of these film shows...
No, Ed Lee, you
must see. What was the last film you saw? What was the last film you saw at the cinema?
When did he last actually enter?
The words Mary Poppins mean anything?
On that note, it is time to cross the studio,
Chewie.
Someone's got to have time to smoke. And yes, Dee Dee, can we have a quick card to go over there? Just check I've got a lighter. Yep. Thank you very much.
This New Year's Eve, Architecture in Helsinki present I Do, a gilded oral journey into 2010 at the Toff in town. DJ sets from New York City's
Triple R.
Today is a day of total fire ban.
Oggi è un giorno di total fire ban.
It is not permitted.
Non è permesso.
To light fires.
Accendere fuochi.
Incinerators.
Incineratori.
Or barbecues.
O T-bone steak e snacks con molto molto white claw tomato sauce e soggy coleslaw.
And furthermore...
Furthermore,
it is prohibited by law.
È proibito da polizia Malacas.
And punishable in court.
And no more workers' compensation.
By a $5,000 fine.
Da una multa di molto, molto dollari.
For more serious offenders.
Per hedge burners.
There are far greater penalties.
Li metteremo cement shoes a right back, bitch.
Thank you, Gino.
Grazie, Gino.
Oh, wow.
And on that note, it is Mr. Tony Martin, Consigliere Greg, and Cecil B. De Hirsch in the studio. Dee Dee
Headley
pushing the buttons, Pablo on the phones, and we were in the middle of discussing comedies of the year and the decade. But in the meantime, Joel has rung us, so we'll say a quick hello to Joel.
How you going, mate?
Good, mate. How are you?
Good.
Have you got a contribution to make?
Oh, yeah, about the highlights of the noughties generation.
Yes.
I could mention a lot of things about films, fashion, music.
Stick to the film at this early stage.
All right, well, my favourite films of the noughties were The Devil's Rejects, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning.
As opposed to The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Middle?
You know, The Beginning, the after the remake happened.
Okay, Tony Martin...
That was, yeah, it was a new version, but before.
Yep. I think the word they used diesel in there,
is the word where prequel.
I want to say, you know,
there was a Bunnings, Bunnings sponsored.
Yeah, it was diesel rather than two-stroke. Yeah.
I also want to say why it was so hard in this generation for us bogans to get chicks, you know.
And how does that relate to the movies? Couldn't you take...
Know, like I said, I'm a diehard heavy metal fan, right?
Yeah.
And you know how a lot of those guys, you know, long hair and that, like a lot of these chicks, the funny thing is, right, it could be the biggest genre of music in the world, yet there's some people that just don't know it exists. Like, I could top off a few Australian metal bands out there that I wouldn't mind recommending, if you don't mind.
Hang on a second, you've drifted from film once again there, Joel. I think you have a particular barrow to push the heavy metal area.
Yeah.
But before we do that, we'll discuss Spinal Tap for a second.
Yep.
Have you seen Spinal Tap?
Or have you seen the movie Metallica?
Some Kind of Monster, yes.
Yeah, excellent.
I'm tipping you liked it.
Yep.
So what you're saying is the ladies don't want to go and see Parkway Drive or somebody.
Yeah, I mean, the real, we're all the real old school bogans these days. Like, a lot of the new metal's all emo nowadays, man.
So what do the ladies want to see? They want to go and see The Holiday, that film.
You know, I'd rather chicks see movies like, you know, like, what are those real bogan movies like? Remember in the 90s, Airheads and movies like that?
Yeah. Well, you could still...
All those real long-haired kind of dudes should come back with leather and flannies and tight jeans and...
Airheads too.
You know?
That'd get the ladies back into
what
the cinema.
What about Airheads 3D?
Yeah, that'd be totally awesome.
Yeah, 3D Airheads. Are you going to go see Avatar 3D?
What about that Anvil movie?
Anvil?
See, there, that could be the happy medium. You know, there's heavy metal music.
Hard because I've got a mullet on top with long hair at the back.
Yeah, a bit of a Johnny Farnham.
Nah, I'm more of the Joe Elliott look.
Right.
And I like to be metal, true metal. You know, and I mean,
yep.
Why is it so hard for us guys to get the Sheilas nowadays? I've got a job. I do a bit of wood sculpting sometimes with a bit of labouring.
Well, have you got splinters? Maybe
what?
Splinters. Maybe that's off-putting.
Nah, I don't think so. Once the girls would love it.
Yeah, but it's a different day and different age. Are you twittering?
Nah.
So less with the chainsaw sculpture, more with the twittering is the answer here.
I think so.
Oh, yeah, but why all these businesses?
Nah, but I think Tony will give you now a selection of DVDs.
Will I?
That you should be searching for.
What?
So that if there are females in the same area of the DVD store, you know you have a soulmate.
Oh, the red shoes. I think obviously that you'd love that.
The red shoes, yep. You got a pen?
No.
Crayon?
That's rubbish. It's
in my head. I've got the red shoes.
If it's got a lot of ballet, it's mostly ballet, very little new metal.
Yep. That's a bit of old metal ballet.
What else do the ladies like? What about Notting Hill? You'd enjoy that.
Nah.
Hugh Grant,
real bogan films are like Wayne's World and them movies.
Yes,
what about Stone? Wayne's. What about Stone? Surely the ladies would enjoy Stone.
I haven't seen it.
Stone, Cecil, give
Rock
us...
City.
What?
Detroit Rock City. City. Right, so that's what you're after. Airheads, Detroit Rock City, that genre.
You should pre-plan for Mad Max 4 when it comes out.
When is it coming out?
Good question, Headley, but it's going to be made.
Will it be... Yep. What's his name, Mel?
No.
It won't be Mel.
No.
Can also mention me top so many Australian metal bands of the year?
One? Yep.
Well, my favourite band has to be a grind metal band. They're called The Day Everything Became Nothing.
The Day Everything Became Nothing.
They're a pure grind metal outfit, like, you know, the lead singer of Blood Duster.
Oh, intimately.
Yeah. Let's not name any of their albums.
The name of the album's Invention Destruction.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
Thinking of earlier stuff.
Metal is the best genre of music in the world, and I reckon us bogans rule, so my message is... Fair go, ladies. Give us a date now before we're doomed.
Okay, good on you, Joel.
I think Anvil is the answer.
Anvil.
Got the metal and it's got human interest.
Yeah.
And I love me horror films too,
yeah.
Especially of all generations, but we're talking the noughties, so...
Yeah, good on you, Joel. Well, we're going to go through the whole list as we speak, and we're waiting now for Tony's contribution for comedy.
Comedies.
Thanks, Joel.
Thanks, mate.
Good on you. And comedies for the, not only the year...
Decade.
Has it been a good year for comedies?
Oh, I can't think of... I'm sort of one bad one that won The Invention of Lying. I didn't enjoy that, but yeah. No, that was earlier.
Yeah.
But I tell you what I always return to is that film Superbad. I've seen that many times.
Really?
That still works, I think. Anchorman was quite funny. But these are not like of the decade kind of movies. These are good. What's a funny movie to get on Saturday night on DVD?
Right. Do you when you go and select a movie, is it depending on your mood? Or?
Well, no. I've heard about it. People are raving about it.
Yeah.
Well, they're not. It tends to be TV series now, though.
Really? Is that your latest?
Yeah. I haven't seen any films this year that are as good as if you got two episodes of Breaking Bad and joined them together and said that was a movie.
Really?
That would be better than pretty much every, except maybe Up, which I quite liked. And I haven't seen all of the films this year, though.
And it goes back to what you were saying, Greg, that it's only the huge blockbusters or the little tiny ones getting made. Those movies in the middle just don't have a chance anymore.
Yeah, and also comedies are just so hard to make well. I mean, like, when was the last time you went to a cinema and you just heard the audience just laughing like drains throughout the movie? I reckon the last one I thought Hangover, I'd put in that, and I'd also Borat was another one where just
Borat, the
audience laughed.
There was
What Just Happened was a film that came out this year, which isn't a pure comedy, but it had a comedy theme to it. But I know that constantly Greg is talking about box office being bigger and distribution doing well. I just think there's been a whole overall shift to be conservative, and conservative means, as I mentioned before, doing remakes and sequels and those things.
So if you're doing a track record,
so if you're doing a comedy, you're starting up with a new sense of it. Now, even though we talked about The Hangover, which was my favourite film of the year, that was made independent of distribution till after the film was made, and they picked it up and then ran with it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a studio or even a mini studio making it.
And Greg, what's the current situation with Australian filmmaking and the tax laws? Did the new government change any of that, or is it easier or harder to get financing or tax breaks? Because
this government haven't changed what was brought in before this government, which was there's a tax credit on spend. But the difficulty is that a lot of the pre-sale market internationally that people would go and pre-sell their films has dried up. So the distributors now are more conservative, as Cecil said, and they'll just wait for the films to be finished. They're not as aggressive, and if they really like something, they'll bid and try and get it, rather than trying to buy something off a script.
So that's
made it harder to finance them, and a lot of films have stumbled with their financing plans.
So is the number of films being made in Australia dropping?
I think in the particular ranges they are, the sort of films in the $4, $5, $6 million range are very difficult to finance, because the pay TV networks used to come in as part of the financing. They've retreated out of that space. It's a really bizarre circumstance now with pay TV, that the pay TV networks now are, and the movie networks like the Showtimes are commissioning television series, and the movie network has got television series like The Jesters and Shandon Pictures, whereas previously they would be putting more of their money into financing Australian films.
Why are they doing that?
Why are they doing that?
Yeah.
I think the pay TV programmers...
exclusive programming.
You can only find it with them. And that's... Mm. In order to get the subscription to justify it, you can't...
So the argument is that if we make a movie which is going to last for 90 minutes, as compared to let's make a series that runs for 10 hours, we can run more
no,
bits.
No, I don't think it's that the more bits. I think it's more that if they invest in a film, the punters could have seen it at the box office, they would have got it first on DVD before it goes to the pay. The idea for the pay providers is saying, watch us, because this is the only place you can get it.
But they could make a telemovie. They could say we're doing an exclusive for movie network, blah, blah, blah. Why are they making a decision between going to a TV series running 10 episodes to a movie running for 90 minutes? What's the reason for that?
I think that gives them more coverage, because it's then over 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's another argument as well, Hedley and Greg. I think that there is better quality storytellers in the world of television, as Tony talked about, than there are in the world of cinema. And I reckon they're getting TV guys to tell their story.
But isn't it a lot cheaper as well?
Not necessarily.
No. But that's without question. The best writing at the moment is on television.
TV?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're getting better quality.
Yeah, but that's also because they're also being given the independence. Like some of the fully funded television series that are coming out of HBO, and indeed some of the Australian ones. There's some great writing.
So if you look at the Australian industry for such, you can see that there's a lot of actors, as Greg talked before, about working internationally. Our directors are working internationally, predominantly in America. Our cinematographers are working.
They have to have something under their belt here or they won't get a job over there.
Well, they do. Some of them have substantial work and some don't, but they still get work over there, working very successfully over there. However, our own industry, telling our own stories, is not working.
Mm.
The same people are working on both sides of the continent.
Oh, but wait, there are some real highlights in Australian cinema. I mean, look at the box office for Mao's, $14 million the last time that was done.
Mao's Last Dancer.
Yeah, last time that was done, over $14 million was 2001.
You know, fantastic result.
And so I'll ask you to consider this question. You can give me an answer later. The film Australia, was it worth the expenditure both by the government and others? Did it make a return? But right now we speak to Darren on line one, and I should say the number is, by the way, 93881027. Darren!
Oh, hi. Firstly, I just want to say, Hedley, I've been listening to your show for so long now, I can't even remember, and this is the first time I've ever called.
Since midnight, that's nearly over an hour.
How long has your show been on the air? Because it feels like
49 minutes, exactly.
You can't get an answer on that.
No, I never will.
Someone told me 86. Could that be right?
Nah.
It feels like it. It feels like I've been listening to it since I was a kid. But anyway.
Really?
And you'd realise we don't muck around with bullshit at the front of the call, so what's the point?
Thanks a lot. I just came back from Avatar.
Oh, yes.
And I saw it at IMAX, actually, at Carlton.
Oh, that would have been very big.
It was absolutely massive, and it was a full house. A terrible thing was they didn't even have allocated seating, so you had to queue for about an hour. It was pretty annoying. But I have to say, the film was absolutely spectacular.
I heard also you have to be in the middle if you're on the side with
a... Yeah,
you've
got to be in the centre, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. Is Tony still there or is he gone?
Yes. No.
He's chained. We chain him till 2.
Oh, that's good. I don't know. Have you guys seen many 3D films? I'm just not getting impressed by it. I find it very blurry and jittery.
So you saw 3D at IMAX?
Yeah, it's just not doing it for me. The image is very blurry and jittery.
I think you've got too much of the lot. Either see it at pure IMAX or see it at pure 3D. Go to a normal cinema and see it 3D there.
I saw Up at 3D Jam Factory and I thought that had the same sort of problem.
I saw that in 3D and it was absolutely sharp.
Yeah.
Fine, but is it...
What about when there was a lot of motion? I found it very jittery.
I got used to that quickly.
That's your IMAX.
But is that true you have to sit in the middle for 3D or for IMAX? Which one's that?
I'd probably suggest sitting up the back of IMAX.
I saw Avatar at the Jam Factory and I sat not necessarily in the middle, over on the side.
Right.
And I had my glasses over my glasses. Yeah. And it was fine.
And you don't even wear glasses, which
correct.
Is
being ostentatious,
yeah.
Trying to get
sunglasses. Yeah, sunglasses.
Avatar. Well, how did you find it yourself, the movie?
I thought it was visually, and I won't ruin it for those who haven't seen it, I thought it was visually stunning. I thought it was a complete... I was blown away by the way it looked. I thought the story was fantastic. The way the story was told in terms of the dialogue was a bit cliche.
Yeah.
And I was very disappointed with the ending. But as an overall experience, I was swept up into the film.
Performances?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think James Cameron can tend to be a little cheesy sometimes.
Oh, it's insane.
Let me just ask...
And also the end, and which we won't ruin, but you've seen it, the end was just a bit, you know, popcorn.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Since most of the money that films make are on DVD and TV and cable and all that, what happens with Avatar? Will they be able to play it as a 2D...
Yeah, it'll still look... I mean, I've seen it on 1080p on the internet. It still looks amazing.
So you won't lose anything by not seeing it 3D. It'll look like a normal film.
Yeah, it looks like a normal film, yeah.
Because what Tony was saying before is that, you know, the 3D films, when you're not watching it 3D, look...
Yeah, they're not. There's no bit in Avatar where a guy has a ping pong bat. Just a blue-painted guy with a ping pong bat for 25 minutes.
Well, that one, I don't want to plug the Jam Factory because it's, you know, it's a very nice place, but you can elect to see it in a 2D environment if you want to. Yeah. So you don't have to worry about
okay.
it.
Okay.
But this film wasn't one of those 3D gimmicks where they keep shoving things in your face.
No.
Oh, he did use a bow and arrow, and that was a cheap shot.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
But generally, it wasn't really like that at all.
Not at all.
Yeah. And we're discussing the decade. What's the standout for you over the noughties?
I must admit, I didn't think it was one of the greatest decades for cinema myself, but I really loved Inglourious Basterds. I thought that was fantastic.
It's a really good film. It's probably the best film of the year for me, but not my favourite.
Right, yeah, so best so. Quality, but not most
just
enjoyable.
Just a really gutsy film, really well-directed, great dialogue, really entertaining, good fun.
Yeah.
But my bias was towards The Hangover because it just made me laugh.
And some of the stinkers you've experienced, Darren?
I think the Star Wars prequels would be up there. They were pretty shocking.
Numbers 1, 2 and 3?
Yeah, all bad.
Yeah, all bad.
I thought Irreversible was an amazing movie.
Don't know that one.
See it.
You haven't seen that one?
No.
Irreversible with Monica Bellucci, the French film?
It's quite disturbing. It's told backwards.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody, but it's on a lot of best lists.
Yeah, I thought Indiana Jones 4 was a stinker as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, shocking.
Yeah, terrible.
Don't you love how... What just sums it up for me is if you go to a place like JB or Borders or somewhere at the moment, you see... You know how DVDs are really cheap now?
Yeah.
You see the original three are still, like, mostly... 1995, maybe 1595, but Crystal Skull's already getting down to 995.
The market speaks.
I actually, you were talking about TV before. I was at JB the other night. I saw something really interesting that the Blu-ray section was packed out, the TV series on DVD section was packed out, and the DVD section was quite empty. I thought that was quite interesting.
What, the film DVD section?
Yeah, the movie was on DVD. There was like one or two people in there. But the TV shows on DVD was packed out.
So you mean,
Blu-rays were packed out.
Oh, you mean packed out in terms of customers?
In terms of people, yeah. Hopefully that'll...
Well, that goes back to what you were just saying, Greg, and Cecil, that the movie channels on cable are making TV series rather than movies.
Yeah.
Because that seems to be reflecting the public.
And also I think that what's happening now is that people are time poor and they're saying, you know what, it's coming up to Christmas, it's the holidays, I'll buy the box set of a TV series, either recently released or an old one, and just sit back and I'll just watch the whole series in one committed or two committed viewing as compared to having to hang around for every Tuesday night.
And the other thing in the States, the 9:30 slot on TV is dropped by over, I think it's about 2 million people that ordinarily watch TV in the States at that time of night, and they've worked it out. It's at that time of night that people are watching their box sets of DVDs or stuff they've recorded during the day.
And Hedley, to give you a sense of the effect of what DVD and internet has done, let's look at NBC, the television network in America. 10 years ago, that was making $1 billion profit a year. Today, it's losing over $1 billion a year. So that's their market has completely been ripped away.
Wow. So what's the future?
Downloads, isn't it?
Yeah, but what's the future for these dudes?
These free-to-air television are in trouble in America. In Australia, they're countering it by operating digital channels, but it's very... With the days where they had big, fat profits and not going to work, they've got to have low overheads, probably low production costs, and try and run at reasonable levels and get reasonable profits.
They have the blockbusters like the Super Bowl and the Academy Awards. That's not enough to...
No. Not at all. Not
really.
Enough. Well, look, they're running Jay Leno at 9:30.
Consigliere Greg, what's the future of all media with the competition of free internet downloads?
Well, the televisions will be 3D and they'll be internet enabled. So people will now have their programming delivered a lot the same way that people now download their iTunes.
So you'll pick what you want to watch.
And that's right.
Do you really think 3D will take off?
In the home?
Yeah.
Really? Does it work? Why?
I'm not a fan. I don't know.
I'm not either.
The same glasses that you get when you go see Bolt 3D. Can I watch that on 3D on TV yet?
Well,
surely
it's
not that hard.
They've just released a Blu-ray 3D player in the States and a Panasonic plasma, and you do have to sit and wear the stupid glasses watching TV at home. I mean, who's going to do that?
I don't think it's strong enough. Because ultimately, you still, even if you put the glasses on, you still end up watching Avatar for the movie that it is. And if the movie doesn't deliver, it doesn't make any difference how many sets of glasses you got on.
Yeah, exactly right.
I agree.
Good on you, Darren. Very nice to talk to you.
Thanks a lot. I hope to keep listening for another 20 years.
Yes. Good on you.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. And it's time now to cross to the pages of the Sunday Age to the deputy editor thereof, Mr. Mark Forbes. Mark, welcome.
Hello, Hadley.
How are you, Mark? Are you a bit of a movie buff yourself?
Oh, I like the occasional movie, Matt, yeah.
Do you take any notice of what the Green Guide critics say before you go to a movie?
E.G. go.
I've got my favourites. I sort of have a look at what Jim Fembry says or Tom Ryan does sometimes, yeah, mate. I want to make sure I'm not going out to see a total dud.
Yep, and this has been your first week in the new Battlestar Galactica, hasn't it?
Oh, it is, mate. Yeah, a building actually with windows and lifts that work on the whole. It's a whole new world.
Really, and
it's amazing how the words "the age" on the front of the building, you can hardly read them from space.
They've moved into the corner of Collins.
Oh, yeah, have a look at the size of the building and the size of the sign.
Really. Oh. Really, and I believe as you go through there's X-ray and detectors and all that.
Oh, just these fancy sliced glass doors that threaten to slice you in half, mate.
Okay, well, what's in the paper tomorrow?
Well, the big story is the fiasco at Copenhagen. At the front page headline: Copenhagen cop out. We've got there. I don't know if you followed the marathon session there, but I think when you step back from it, it all looks like a pretty appalling and chaotic mess.
I'd be shocked if anyone was surprised, because it's going to, you know, there's never going to be an agreement.
I always think of myself as a cynical journalist, and find myself at moments like this realising that I've got this sort of quaint and naive optimism that people will try and get together for the good of a globe.
Yeah, but it's not people, it's politicians, and they've all got, you know, they think up to the next election cycle, you know, they're thinking what's going to happen in the next 2.5 or 3 years.
So Malcolm Turnbull believed something could have happened and lost his job over it.
Correct.
And all of us go, nothing's going to happen at Copenhagen.
Exactly right.
So he's a great politician.
Yeah, well, he made a huge mistake. Now they've got Tony Abbott there, who's proved himself to be correct by rejecting it, because it's pointless. As long as, you know, America, India and China are, you know, committing 60% of the pollution, what we do is irrelevant. And they're never going to stop. China's not going to stop. We're never going to stop selling coal to China. That's half the problem, because there's money involved, correct?
Unfortunately, I think you're right there, Hedley.
Yeah, and what we should be doing now is planning for what happens after there's a 3-degree or 4-degree increase in climate temperature, start collecting water a bit better, start, you know, looking at what areas are going to be flooded and where it's going to be monsoons, and how we're going to react in a post-global, you know, climate change world, because that's going to happen.
Moving all the DVDs up to a higher shelf.
Exactly.
Maybe sensible advice.
Tony Martin, always thinking.
If anyone has got any shares in Snowfield developments, I'd advise them to sell now.
Yeah, exactly. Glaciers are us. I mean, that's it. It's inevitable. The world, then, even if there was an agreement, China would never stick to it. America would find loopholes. Their lawyers would be onto it. India couldn't regulate it if they wanted to. So that's it.
That's
the
a happy story, Hedley.
Well, it's inevitable. We've got to look at what we as Australians can do to, you know, make our lives better we can accept the Great Barrier Reef's finished, you know. It doesn't mean death. It means we've got to acclimatise to a different climate, which means capturing more water so we can irrigate, because it won't be as much rainfall. That's all.
It was Waterworld, I think.
There
was a lot of urine drinking, if I remember. Is that coming?
Okay, another story, apart from the Copenhagen Copa.
A bit of bright news for all the Catholics out there. We're set to get our first saint, with Mary MacKillop getting the nod from the Pope as having performed a second miracle.
That was tonight, wasn't it? They said 10 o'clock they were going to make taken
it
out.
What did she do?
It's meant to be three, isn't it? Isn't it three?
Well, she picked up in the draft, like passing deep test, did she?
I'm a little sus about this.
I was sure you had to have three. That's only her second. And I think the first one was got your nose.
Well, got your nose.
That's what it turned out to be.
Well, they've also claimed that with the little Bangladeshi co-joined twins, the order has claimed that as a miracle as well, saying the fact that they prayed for them and the fact they survived the operation's another miracle.
Well, that's it.
The bar's pretty low for miracles. Yeah.
Well, she's pretty good. Yeah. She's been dead for 100 years.
Yeah. They might better save the Australian film industry.
That's more than a miracle.
They've also given the nod to Pope John Paul II and Pius XII, a well-known friend to the Jewish lobby for his efforts during World War II. So.
What, they're both saints as well now?
They're on the road to becoming saints.
On the road. A couple more barriers
to
live.
Well, they're going to play well next year,
the Yeah, that's right. Saints. I think Melbourne picked them up in the draft. And what else is in the news?
There's some new legislation the Brumby government's putting through fairly quietly that's going to block about 80% of stress claims under workers' comp. This is at a bit of a push of employer groups who are getting peeved at people saying they're stressed at work and they're going off on workers' comp. So they're going to raise the bar on that one, Hadley.
And speaking of raising the bar, anything on Tiger Woods?
No, thankfully we are a Tiger Woods-free zone for the first time in weeks. But we do have another update in one of our special Sunday Age sagas. We've had a couple running in the past few weeks, as you'd know, the old Stinkatron out there. But my personal favourite has been Sabi the Dog, the little Labrador found by that survived the ravages of a Taliban in Afghanistan.
I thought you were going to say the one that ate the Christmas tree decorations the other day. No,
not that one.
It wasn't putting in that one.
It actually looks like the suggestion is from over in Afghanistan that the ADF, so keen to get this dog back, may have actually kidnapped the father of a Taliban leader wanting to do an exchange for the dog. Unfortunately, the Taliban bloke concerned says he wasn't interested in getting... One who wasn't interested in getting his dad back, but he wouldn't mind 10 grand.
That's cool.
There are some rumours flying around that some money did change hands in order for Sabi to get back for his photo op with the Rudster when he did his tour.
K-Rud. Just back to Tiger Woods for a second. Did the Jessica Simpson rumours pan out to be correct?
I think they were pretty roundly denied, but with Tiger these days, you wouldn't guess. We do have one gossip story in our pages, isn't it? It does look official that Shane and Simone, Shane Warne and his off again wife Simone are back together because they're about to pop $9 million bucks down tomorrow on a new home in Middle Brighton. So
really?
There is one happy ending to
that. Wow. That's mind-blowing. That's in the paper tomorrow. And you've got his address, I'm sure, printed there.
No address, but a photo of the property, which will probably get Shane a little peeved again.
When you print photos or think of celebrities, do they ring you up and hassle you, or do their people? What happens there?
Oh, sometimes. The pollies tend to be the worst, actually. The pollies tend to take offence at sort of anything or anything that they see as a transgression in their personal lives.
And who rings you? The offended pollies media dude or the offended polly himself?
Often the polly themselves. I think Keating was a great one for the early morning Sunday wake up call for Sunday newspaper editors.
Mark, is there anything private on a politician or celebrity that is not private in your mind?
In my mind, yeah. For sure. I mean, I personally think that it's got to be in some way be relevant to their public role before you rush into print. I mean, I was. State political reporter for the Sunday Age
many moons ago when we were sort of swapping blows with Jeffrey Kennett, and I refused Precious to write about suggestions of some things that that Jeffrey was getting up to. Cause
so what about his? What about if he said to you, "I don't want my address printed"? Would you still print his address? Would you show a photo of his house?
I must admit that I did sort of have a bit of a blue with Jeff. I worked for Channel 7 for a while and did an expose of his home renos basically raising the question of who actually paid for the renovations, given that they were a Hudson Conway building crew that came down in their off time from the building the casino, and he claimed that that was just a garden shed, and so I sent the Channel 7 chopper over and found rather palatial extensions, and he didn't take kindly to it at all. He ran up seven bosses and told me that he'd have me sacked by the end of the year, and he turned out to be right.
Wow, unbelievable.
Just a really big shed.
Yeah, just a palatial shed there.
Jeff Shed.
Thank you very much, Consigliere Greg. Okay, well, Mark, it's been a huge year in the media. I think probably the low point would be the false nude Pauline Hanson photos just before an election. I think that speaks of the dangers of the media in a rush to print.
But is there anyone you know that didn't think it was her?
We were very concerned by that one, since it was run by a direct competitor.
I'm saying you must have rubbed your hands in glee, but just before an election...
It did look like it, though.
But think of the danger just before an election that you print a wrong story about someone, you know, Kay Rudd with little boys or something. It turns out to be wrong, but it was 2 weeks before the election.
It wasn't her nude, but that's what she looks like nude.
Yeah. yes, and on that note, thank you for the whole year, Mark.
And all the best for the new year to come, Eddie.
So thank you very much.
Listeners out there from the Sunday Age.
Good on you, cheers. Sunday Age. Good on you. Copenhagen, cop out the headline tomorrow.
Okay.
Good on you, Mark. Thank you.
Gotcha. Bye.
Bye-bye. Time to go back to Studio 2. And, yes...
Dennis Walter joins us with Yippee-Ia, Ghostwriters in the Storm.
Are you on 3MP as well now?
No, maybe. I could
filling
well be
in
on,
with Tony Wilson.
We're on right now, live.
I've always wanted to go to the Vatican, just so that I could run into the Pope in one of the corridors and say, fancy meeting you here.
Merry Christmas,
if you're not sure about Christmas presents or just indecisive, check out the Triple R merchandise, including hoodies, kids' tees, baby rompers and more. Come in to Triple R, 221 Nicholson Street, East Brunswick, from 10 till 6 Monday to Friday and 10 till 4 Saturdays, and let Candy Cane Kate and Tinsel Tim look after all your Christmas needs. Or you can go to rrr.org.au to check out the whole shebang and order online. The Triple R office will be closed from 5 p.m. on Thursday the 24th of December and will reopen on Monday the 4th of January. Happy holidays!
Biggest Dickus.
Hilly Gritta.
Biggest Dickus.
Hilly Gritta.
Biggest Dickus.
For the final time of 2009, Hilly Gritta.
And the decade.
And the decade.
Yes.
Introduce the panel, please.
Left to right?
Let's do left to right.
Left to right tonight. He's hanging left to right. Cecil B. DeHirsch, icon of Australian film industry, and who looks with a perhaps slightly jaded eye.
Bloodshot.
But with an extra set of 3D glasses.
Hey, Biggest, did you enjoy Samson Delilah? Yeah, the one about that sort of Melbourne actor with that 70s Afro-American singer.
Oh, yes. It does ring a bell, but no, I haven't seen it. Oh.
Next, Consigliere Greg. When one talks about fingers on the pulses, one talks about Consigliere Greg and his finger and the pulse.
And biggest, I've got a question. Do you ever show documentaries down at your cinema?
No.
And finally,
I owned a cinema.
Yes, Mr. Tony Martin, who was the human encyclopedia when he was taken by gypsies from his home in Waikikamukau, New Zealand. They gave him one copy of Leonard Maltin's book, which he memorised left and right, together with the logarithm tables. Unfortunately, the logarithm tables no longer quite as useful.
No,
but still, the human encyclopedia of film.
Hello, Biggis. How are you?
Top of the morning to you, T. Martin.
What's the best film of the decade?
I don't know about the decade, but definitely the year. I saw two movies, so I suppose I can have a winner and a runner-up.
Dee Dee pushing the buttons, Pablo on the phones, and Paul in Paul's pad.
Tarek.
Yes.
Missing.
Tarek missing in America.
Selling weapons.
He is listening to the show. He just texted me. He wanted a shout-out.
He is his own axis of evil.
He is. How many full-cavity body searches do you think Tarek's enjoyed while living in America?
Mission accomplished.
You know the guy that snuck into the White House with his babe?
Yeah, unbelievable. Fantastic story.
His name was Tarek as well.
Apparently he was allowed to be there.
Yeah, he apparently, but still full cavity body search, as our own Tarek enjoys crossing borders. takes his own lube, takes his own gloves.
Guess for a certain age you've got to check the prostate.
That's right.
Only likes the ribbed glove too.
he asked for them to wear ribbed gloves.
Best and worst, Biggest.
Yeah, sorry.
So there was only two movies I saw. One of them was 3 days ago, The Hangover, as mentioned previously, and the other one was being a Star Trek fan, Star Trek.
Both good.
A bit disappointed with Star Trek towards the end there, because there was two of the what's that character called? The one with the prickly ears.
Dr. Spock.
Dr. Spock. That's
a big fan. I can see.
Obviously.
The prickly ears.
I'm not familiar with the old one. I'm always a Next Gen or a Voyager person, but that's going against the Prime Directive. So you can't meet your former past.
What number Star Trek was that one?
11.
11. Talk about, that's what you were talking about. Why not bankroll that?
Who wouldn't? They got a whole new cast. I thought, we can't afford the old guys. Whole new cast. Get J.J. Abrams to direct it. Wango, bingo, gazillion.
Cameo and Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, and Leonard, hasn't he died 8 times over the last 11?
He's actually reemerged as an actor in demand again.
No, not Leonard Nimoy. Yeah, I'm talking about the character Spock. Didn't he die about 7 times during...
Oh, that doesn't matter.
You can always go back in time and bring him back.
Hedley, you've got to realise in the world of entertainment, you can have a car that talks. And we believed it. Twice. My Mother, the car, and then Kit, the car with David Hasselhoff. Twice we had a car that talked.
Night, right,
we had a horse that talked.
Yeah, a horse.
We can have
horse only spoke French.
Bewitched can have dubbed. Okay, Bewitched can have two actors playing the same husband.
I found whenever you went into Star Trek, it was always the episode where they were in like 1920s gangster planet.
Yeah, I saw
whatever
that
planet
one
that was. The Al Capone dimension.
Just on movies, we haven't touched on what would you call it, spoof movies, where you've got like the Transformers coming out and there's a Transmorphers coming at the same time, where it's a low-budget equivalent.
Oh, yeah.
And the porn equivalent, usually, too.
Yeah. What have we seen this year in the equivalent of the low-budget ones?
Have we seen any of those? Because when I was a kid, there was Superbug, that was a very poor... I think Hong Kong derived version of the Love Bug.
Hey, what's happened
Herbie.
To the? What happens? What's happened?
Search for Golem, was that out this year? That was a fan.
Search for Golem. Dee Dee suggesting was a poor man's Lord of the Rings spin-off.
What happened to the guys who did Naked Gun and Flying High and?
Oh, the what's name brothers?
Yeah, Zucker.
Well,
are they still doing it?
Well, the one of them, Jerry Zucker, made Ghost, and then he was out of the spoof game, and then he made a film called Rat Race. That was in about 2000, and I don't think he's ever done anything since. David Zucker directed the. Didn't he do... Well, he did a couple of the scary movie...
Yeah, he does those things.
One of those. But then one of them went really right-wing and did this film... It was like Bill O'Reilly's top film of the year, and they couldn't find anyone to be in it. And I think one of Chris Farley's brothers had to play the lead.
Right.
It was called An American, An American Dream or something like that. And it was
really?
A huge debacle, and he had to sort of go. It was like this. It was like a comedy made by the Republican Party. I swear to you, look it up on either. It must be on David Zucker's list.
IMDb.
I actually was on last week's show, and I didn't get asked what my favourite TV show was, Headley.
Oh, yes.
Due to time restraints. But by the way, it is Man vs. Food. Season 2, I've downloaded a lot and watched it, if anyone's into Man vs. Food. obviously not. Curb Your Enthusiasm / the Return of Seinfeld Gang was an absolute fizzer.
Right, you mean in the actual series or in the bizarre version that was shown on Channel 9 one night?
The
here.
Bizarre version that was shown where they said it's the Seinfeld reunion and it was, in small brackets, Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right, that's because within the seventh series of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which hasn't been shown here yet, there's a story arc about there being a Seinfeld reunion, which happens within the show. I think it starts like Ep 3, ends Ep 8. And it really only makes sense in the framework of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Channel 9 advertised it as the Seinfeld reunion.
Exactly.
And it was a one-hour special, and they just showed two episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm back-to-back. And I think in the air they didn't show any of Larry David. There was only bits from the Seinfeld bit
so
within it.
So it obviously wouldn't have made sense.
But I think they showed, like, episode 3, and then someone told me they then just jumped to episode 8. So they just showed basically two random episodes of a show most Channel 9 viewers would never have heard of, with bits of a new Seinfeld.
And there's a making of, which is floating around Foxtel as well, you can watch as well.
Really?
Yep.
Who would have made that decision at Channel 9?
Programming.
And they would have thought that's a good idea?
Absolute,
correct.
Absolute rubbish. They advertised it as the Seinfeld reunion, and I'm waiting for a Seinfeld episode, and it was just Larry David sitting there just negotiating with the rest of the crew about doing a Seinfeld episode reunion. And it was just shit. I mean, I love Curb Your Enthusiasm, but it wasn't, and had nothing to do with
Seinfeld. Well, if they're playing two episodes out of order and randomly...
Well, you're going, it's not going to appeal to Curb Your Enthusiasm fans. They're not going to watch that.
No.
They're not going to want to watch that.
No.
And it's not going to appeal to the normal Channel 9 viewer. It doesn't seem to appeal to anybody.
Especially when Curb Your Enthusiasm's on at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Mystifying.
Mystifying indeed. And Consigliere Greg, the Freeview channels, are they posing a threat to cable TV?
They are. Do you know that the...
Because there'll be 15 of them eventually, won't there?
But at the moment, 7.2 and Go combined, I think their ratings are more than SBS at the... And,
really?
And I think the uptake has been to the detriment of the pay. So they're a real competitor.
Is that why Foxtel are advertising their arse off at the moment?
Foxtel always do well at this time of the year. They get a lot of subscriptions.
Because
and
there's repeats on...
And movie. Everyone's around to watch a lot of TV.
But yeah, it is pretty competitive out there.
There's another reason why they're doing that, I believe, is because Optus have ceased in their pay TV service.
Oh, interesting.
What was that?
And what about OzStar?
What, Optus and
that's original.
They still go...
That's original.
No, Galaxy. I was thinking of Galaxy.
What, Optus and no longer are going to have Foxtel?
Optus are no longer going to promote their pay service, I believe, from what I read on the forums. I'm not too sure.
Well, I'll just put their the channels will just go on the platform, that's all.
Yeah, I think they're more interested in their internet and their phone.
Yeah. All right, Biggest, finally, film of the decade?
Can you give me a choice of three, please? A, B, or C?
Well, can I mention this list I found? There are lists all over the internet, every newspaper... The Sunday Times, The New Yorker are printing their best films of the last decade. The people at Defamer here in Australia, to be very helpful, have aggregated a lot of the lists so
excellent.
That you can see from these lists which was the most popular film of the, or which is the best film of the decade. And the film that got the most votes, 12 votes, was There Will Be Blood.
That was fantastic.
The Paul Thomas Anderson film. That was the winner. And in second place, equal on 11 lists, was Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I mentioned that last year.
And the Lord of the Rings films. And third on 10 votes was No Country for Old Men. This is a very Hollywood stroke US cinema centric
Who would
list.
Have voted? What age group?
Well, no, but this is like of, say, they've aggregated the New Yorker's best films of the year.
Oh, okay.
The,
so it's
the London Times. Yeah. Yeah, it's the various critics
it's the
list.
The Cecils of the world.
Yeah.
What's the name of the movie that was on last year that was set in New York with a chap, I've done on a handycam, with a chap that was leaving to go to Japan and then all of a sudden there was a big bang and some monsters invaded.
Cloverfield?
Cloverfield, was it? Can I just say that...
How do you know that?
I haven't seen it, I know the shorts.
How fuck do you know that?
Have you seen that's a la Blair Witch Project.
I haven't seen it, but it's like a big project. Wasn't it? It wasn't J.J. Abrams, was it? It was somebody... It was him. It was J.J. Abrams.
It's like Blair Witch done on a camcorder with constantly shaking and moving it. I'm not into scary movies. So picture this, constant moving and shaking, scary movie, done on a camcorder, me flying to LA at 30,000 feet, massive turbulence, I've shat myself.
Oh, literally?
Just about.
Nurse!
Wettest, thickest.
They come in with moist ones.
Well, I don't see...
Push the buzzer.
I can't see Cloverfield on any of these lists, but I'm not saying it wasn't good enough.
Well, I definitely pushed the button and called out, Lady!
Lady! Cecil, Jerry Lewis. There was a thing on this week on Channel 2... History of Comedy in Film. Did you see that?
No, I missed it. I heard it was very good. Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it a lot, and when it came to the Jerry Lewis part,
mm-hmm.
I didn't realise that he actually wrote, produced, directed, and acted in all his films.
Well, not in all of them, but a good chunk of them.
A good chunk of his big hits.
And he invented video split because he was starring
in
the film.
Yeah, they said that, yes.
They did that?
Yeah,
oh, that's my story.
No, but amazing that, you know, you thought he's just the wacky guy up there on screen, but he was actually the whole creative force.
Absolutely.
And thus your hero.
One of my heroes, and hopefully the feeling's mutual.
You and the French.
Yes, exactly.
Love him.
I still want to see that Jerry Lewis did make a film which has not been released, and that's the one I want to try and get.
Would it be on YouTube?
I don't know. Is this
the one in the concentration
camp? Yeah, he played a clown in the concentration
camp. The day the clown cried.
Yeah, and that's never been released, so no. He would have secured all the copies.
No, he doesn't have the copies.
He hasn't?
No.
Okay. Biggest final word from you for the year?
Keep a lookout for Man versus Food, a show of the year, young Jewish chap going around the US challenging certain restaurants in their challenges in how much food he can eat or how hot the food is, etc.
Where's it on?
I think it's on pay. I'm not too sure. I don't have pay TV, but I've been downloading it. It's awesome. Man versus Food. I've watched season one. Season two just finished. Just now, episode 19. It's really good. I love it.
Dee Dee, just nod since you don't have a microphone. We'll send it to Conroy's net filter. Affect Biggest Dickus's downloading. He's saying no. You're okay, Biggest.
Can I ask Consulator Greg, am I doing the wrong thing by downloading shows? I know movies are poo.
No, you can do that. You provide your credit card to iTunes, and they'll send it down, and you pay the legitimate.
If you're paying for it, it's fine.
What we were saying off air, Biggest, are you one of these people who will download it and then buy the DVD of it?
I do indeed. JB Hi-Fi heading down there in the next few days. Yeah.
And so, because I'm like, I mean, people will. I don't know how to download things illegally, but people will give me something they've found on the internet. For example, Breaking Bad, and then you go, oh, it's so good, I want to have the proper DVDs of it.
That's the perfect solution, that if you can download free enough
but I know
to see whether
don't.
You like it, and then you go and buy it.
Here's a classic, True Blood, right? It will never be shown on Australian television.
DD's slightly off mic, listeners.
Sorry, off mic. True Blood probably will never get shown on free-to-air television due to its graphic nature. I picked that up by chance downloading it, and it's a very high-rating show for HBO and States, so
yeah, and you just go
and I went and bought the first season on DVD when it came out.
And there's various shows where you just go, and people listening would have done this, that's not going to be on here.
Okay, Consigliere Greg, is it possible to create an economic model whereby you can download and pay, even if it's a pittance, but a pittance multiplied by a million people, to pay the producer for the program? Is there an economic model being either contemplated between the producers and the studios and the IP people and all that, so the biggest can download his Man vs. Food? They get 10 cents, but there's a billion biggesses and therefore they make their money and everyone's a winner. Is there such a thing contemplated or planned?
Well, there is, but and it's happening at the moment with iTunes music. There's more music now sold by download than there is by CDs that are sold.
And movies? Does and it depend on having a fast music, enough internet?
Yeah, it does. But this is increasing in speed all the time, and compression's getting easier for these things to happen. And with internet-enabled televisions, it will become increasingly popular. Just as, you know, 10 years ago, getting music downloaded was...
But is there a way that they can... You know, you can pay without having to go through all the rigmarole. Just it's automatic. You've downloaded
it. But technology,
a dollar goes to something.
Yeah, but that's the way technology rolls out. Increasingly, it gets more user friendly. And you know, just 5 years ago, just getting on the internet was just such a, you know, slow process. Now everything's got quicker, and downloading films will get quicker. It will take time. Music obviously doesn't take as much. And that's got easier, and they're ahead of the film industry, but it'll come through.
Okay. Good on you, Biggers. Thank you, and thank you for the whole year, Biggers. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Biggers.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Good on you. And before we go back to Studio 2, one more genre, the romantic comedy. I know it's a huge area of interest for you, Tony.
Well, I love old romantic comedies, like The Awful Truth. Or His Girl Friday, but...
Oh, His Girl Friday,
yeah,
that's great.
You see? Really? But modern ones, generally awful.
This year there was probably a bit of best and worst. I thought An Education was shocking.
Who?
An Education was shocking, but Elegy was quite good.
What's the one with the Ricky Gervais?
Ricky Gervais, Ghost Town. Ghost World. No, Ghost Town. Yeah. Ghost, yeah.
That was good.
That had a reasonable crack. It was fairly contrived.
Who was the reasonable crack?
Hedley, there is a genre that has exploded in the last 10 years, and that is the documentary, feature-length documentary.
Oh, Mr. Michael Moore.
Well, yeah, they're all doing them now. But also there's other things, like there's a couple of films came out this year called The September Issue and Valentino, based around the fashion world. I, as you can see, have nothing to do with fashion. But they were really both really entertaining documentaries.
I tell you what, I'd give my best documentary to Busting Down the Doors, the one on the Australian surfers in Hawaii.
Oh, that was... Yes, on Channel 2.
No, it was distributed by Madman. Was released in January this year.
What was the one made on the film industry that some guys made? Australian film industry.
Not quite Hollywood.
No.
There's another one from Adelaide.
Yeah.
I think we had the guy who made it on the phone that night that we had. Not
again,
quite Hollywood.
We haven't quite got the correct information at our fingertips.
Yes, but the correct information has never stopped us
in
before.
Adelaide certainly did make a documentary about some aspect of the Australian film industry.
Yes, and his son was actually an actor as well, five-year-old.
There you go.
He
more
got a gig in a Hollywood
information.
On a Hollywood film. No, he wasn't in the studio guest. He was a phone guest, actually, Dirty, because he was in Adelaide. And on that note, we will go... Therefore, ergo, we will go to Studio 2 for the final time tonight and for our last smoke for the night.
And special request.
What is that?
Oh, I normally bring in film-related music, but hang on, we're going to Studio 2, are we?
What is it? Is it long?
I brought in Dean Martin.
Oh, okay, please.
Ain't that a kick in the head? Because I've been watching the Matt Helm films on DVD.
Oh, great.
I ordered them.
Great.
You can get them all.
Great.
Sadly, not in Region 4. And I figured this song was in Out of Sight quite recently.
Was Dean Martin drunk when he did the Matt Helm films?
Oh, he so was in the second one. Because I watched the
you
first
can tell
one.
He's sort of woozy.
But I watched the first one, The Silences, and it's almost good.
Yeah.
And then I watched Murderer's Row, the second one. I went, oh man, he looks so much older and so much more pissed. What year was this made? And I looked at Silences was made in 1966 and Murderer's Row was made in 1966. Later the same year.
Yeah.
But this is, of course, the original Ocean's 11. Dean sings this song three times during the film.
Ocean's 11.
Well, if not quite like that, but here we go.
can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, folk, ain't that a hole in the boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough to spread. It's just like the fella said. Tell me quick, ain't love a kick in the head? Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. She's telling me we'll be wed. She's picked out a king-sized bed. I couldn't feel any better, or I'd be sick. Tell me quick, boy, ain't love a kick. Tell me quick.
Extremely right Reverend Fred Niles' call to Nazi Germany Party has demanded compulsory AIDS testing for any Australian whose surname is not Nile and whose first name isn't Fred, said a spokesführer. Compulsory AIDS testing forms the major plank in our health policy and our defence policy and our finance policy. As for the environment, we demand compulsory AIDS testing for all trees, and our childcare policy will ensure that no child shall be without an AIDS test by the year 1991.
I heard it in the movie. It seemed so debonair.
102.7 megahertz.
And we are back in Studio One.
Where are these clips coming? That's like previewing 1991?
Yes.
What is that like about 14 years old?
Exactly.
No, sadly not.
And you haven't changed a bit. Mm. And right now in the studio, Mr. Tony Martin, Consigliere Greg, Cecil Beder, Hirsch, Jenny pushing the buttons, Pablo on the phones, and right now from the US of A, Tarek joins us.
Yes.
How are you, Tarek?
How's it going, guys?
Yeah, good. How's it going there?
Not too bad, thanks. I was lying in bed this morning, because it's early here, it's 8:45. I was lying in bed, and I suddenly had the sensation that about latex and rubber gloves, and I could hear Bingers talking about me.
Yes, exactly. Full cavity body search. How's it exactly been going there?
Oh, yeah, it's really, really, really good. Actually,
sold any bombs?
I tell a complete lie. I have been listening to the show for the last couple of hours, and really enjoying it, and I think you guys were touching on how the US broadcast TV market is dead, and it really is. Jay Leno, what a crap show that is on at 9:30 every night, and it's only getting 2 million viewers a week, and they're saying how it's like really on the borderline of being axed.
Compared to what? What did he get when he was Johnny Carson's replacement?
I don't know, but, you know, 2 million is huge numbers in Australia.
He was the number one.
You've got a population of 300, it's nothing.
So network TV is basically disintegrating before your eyes?
Yeah, because as I think Consigliere was saying, everyone's DVRing. Everyone's watching not in real time anymore. You basically, you set your TiVo or your DVR up to watch whatever you want, and then you go out or you watch non-live TV. And that's what we do. We record the news, because the news is only 5 minutes of good stuff. We record The Office, and we record all of the shows we want to watch, and then you watch them out of schedule at the time when it's convenient for you, and you skip all the ads, and
well, that's
really nice viewing in 1 hour.
That was my next question. What has that done to the advertising market? If people are recording and skipping, does that mean that the advertisers aren't getting any value for running ads?
Well, Your esteemed panel is probably more more educated in that regard than I am, but I can tell you one really funny thing, and that is that after being here for not even 9 months, we got selected by Nielsen's for TV ratings. And we're filling in we were filling in a little booklet, and it's such a tedious, mind-numbing process that you just don't ever want to be. It feels almost like doing a jail sentence, having to fill in that.
So in America, they're still filling out books.
Yes.
So in Australia, we're on people meters. We don't do that
here. I was actually selected when I was living there as a Nielsen person too.
And what did you get for it?
And I put down, we had 15 people living in the house, I said. Mm-hmm. Right. And I created the Paul Hogan Show phenomenon single-handedly, quite seriously. I used to say that I had like 12 visitors every time Paul Hogan was on. It was on like one of the local LA channels, you know, like Channel 11 or something. So I worked out I was 80% of his audience, and he had done really well, and they renewed the series. And after that, he got the shrimp on the bar.
Oh, TV.
So it's based on 12 people.
No, 15 people living there and 12 visitors. So it was 27 people, which is a huge number because they didn't send out that many books, you know.
Right.
So I was like 8 million people watching the Paul Hogan Show on Channel 11 in America. I create, Paul Hogan owes me big time. So, Paul, if you're listening, you owe me big time. So, I said I had two TVs, so they gave me two books. So double that again, right? So it was 15 people in two books, and there's only computers reading it. No one actually looks at it. It just goes through the barcode thing. So I was over, you know, 40 people watching the Paul Hogan Show, you know, when only like 150 people got books. So
the entire US television system was 150 people.
Yeah,
with books.
Well, that's all it is. It was handful.
You were 40 of them.
Because I had.
What other shows did you?
No, I did. There was one other show. It was after Johnny Carson show. It was this absolute nutcase that had this one-on-one talk show. Tom Snyder.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
You're right. His most famous interview is he interviewed Charles Manson while he was in prison, and at the end of the interview, you thought, well, which one of these should be in prison and which one should be out, and it wasn't Tom Snyder that should be out. So yeah, I created shows there anyway. Biggest,
sorry.
No, yes, the Tarek, sorry. Yep.
Just really quickly, also the broadcast TV market is doomed unless something really exciting happens, because like in Australia, your TV provider, your TV cable provider is also your internet provider for most people here, and they package up things. So, for example, we've got Time Warner, so of course we get all their films virtually for free. We get whole bunches of movie channels for free, and with the invention of Netflix and Redbox, Netflix is where you can get videos delivered to your TV in high definition, via the internet.
How much for a film?
A dollar.
That's what I said. It should be a dollar a film, because no one will worry about paying it, and it'll be multiplied by a million.
And the reason they can do it is because it's being delivered electronically. There's no DVD to scratch or to destroy.
Delivered through your telephone line?
Cable.
Through your cable.
Through your internet.
Yeah.
So, but you're paying for that internet cable, aren't you?
Yes.
So you're paying a monthly fee to have that?
No, we're paying a monthly fee to have TV and cable as a bundle.
Okay, and do you have to get a special box for the Netflix?
No.
No decoder?
If you've got TiVo can talk. So you go online to Netflix's website, you go through a few authentication
processes. Okay, so it's not a pure dollar.
Well, it's a dollar if you're paying a flat monthly fee.
Then a dollar on top per film.
Yeah, but it's multiplied by, you know, there's 400 million people living there. How many channels do you get again?
As I said last week, we've only got the Lamer package, so we only get 1,600 channels.
Yeah, 1,600, that's right.
However, having said that, there are channels, you know, every channel is duplicated in standard definition and high definition, plus there's the rubbish that no one ever wants to watch anyway, and then you've got 57 ESPN, and then you've got ESPN Radio, which is on TV. Get that? It's where you're actually just watching broadcasters.
I've got that.
So, there's a lot of stuff you'd never ever watch.
Hey, we've got four channels, and there's that same rule applies.
Yeah. That's doesn't matter how many more you get.
Really quickly, then there's also this thing called Redbox, which is like an ATM, and you go up to it, and they have about 50 of the latest movies in it, and you go up and you swipe your credit card, and you choose the movie you want, and it delivers it like a vending machine, like an ATM, like a Coke machine. You take the video out, it scans it because it's got a unique barcode on it, and then you have to return it back to a red box anywhere in the country within 24 hours or they start billing you. So it's only like $1.99 to take a movie, but then the late fees are insane, like it's $10 if you're an hour late, and that's how they get their money back.
Well, that's what we talked about earlier. There's got to be a whole new way of selling and distributing and recouping.
And consequently, Blockbuster, nearly every store is going out of business and they're selling off their stock. You can go in and buy X-Rental DVDs for 99 cents.
That's going to happen here too, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The rental market.
How far behind are we, Consigliere Greg, from that happening here?
It's happening already. It's happening already. I think that the days of those Blockbuster DVD chains... tough business.
They said that for years now that they were going to go out of business and it never happened, but now we're at the crossroads.
Yeah, I reckon now with the pay TV market.
Was it Easy DVD this year that went belly up and someone else is...
Don't know.
The rental market is kind of done in that way, in terms of physically going to a store, renting a DVD and taking it back. That's not going to be as big as it once was and possibly limp through, because what they'll do is you'll effectively rent stuff to your own television.
Blu-ray maybe for a short period. Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Tarek, final comment?
Just wanted to thank everybody for a great show for the year. Nice to chat with everyone, and happy holidays, y'all.
Same to you. Are you coming back to Australia for a visit?
Probably. I've got my visa's being renewed, and I should know early in the new year, because on this first visa I can't leave the country. Strangely, I'm allowed to go to Canada, so I can't leave the country until that's renewed, and then I'll definitely be back. And can you ask Edie, can I have my graveyard spot back again over summer?
Okay, thanks a lot for everything during the year too, Tarek.
Likewise to you, and happy holidays to everybody there.
Good on you, Tarek.
Bye, Tarek.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye. And, Greg.
How you doing, dude?
One comment, Greg, quickly. Best movie of the decade?
Poseidon Adventure.
What did he say?
Poseidon Adventure.
Excellent choice there, Greg. Excellent. No, we didn't say which decade. We didn't say which decade, and he's right there. And so now it is that time of the night for best and worst for the last 10 years, the noughties. Cecil B. DeHirsch, best and worst film for the period 2000 to 2009.
Well, no, technically, Hedley, the decade would start next year. If you went by John Howard's Chaser Millennium, actually don't answer this question to next year.
No,
I'm not going to answer the question this year. I've done it for this year.
Okay.
I'll give you The Hangover as my favourite film for this year.
Okay.
And I'll give you the best film being Inglourious Basterds for this year.
And the worst? Any shockers that you... Did you walk out this year?
On what?
My movie?
Yes. I didn't go out of my way to see shocking films, but I saw a few crappers. I think maybe Ad Education was my crappiest film of the year.
Okay, and we thank you for that, Consigliere Greg.
My best films for the year are The Hangover, Gran Torino, which and for the Australian films, Samson and Delilah was a fantastic achievement.
I agree.
And film for the decade. The Lives of Others, the German film. Geez, not too many takers around here for that.
No, it's just surprised everyone. That's like last week, Thomas.
Not on any of those lists there, Tony.
That was a good film, The Lives of Others. I won't be able to pronounce the director's name, Von Wenischmark or something.
You just did.
Something
and
like that.
Tony Martin.
Of normal films this year, I really like Up, but I think possibly the best film I've seen this year, and indeed of the decade, would be the clip on YouTube called Cat Cherto, which is where they've got the cat that can play the piano, and they've composed a symphony so that the clips of him match the orchestra that's playing along with it.
Who stars in that?
Don't know. Whoever owns the cat
that plays the piano. There's only one proper cat that plays the piano on YouTube.
Right.
And it's whoever has got all the clips of that, composed a piece of music, and then got an orchestra, and then filmed that. That's my film of the decade.
Hedley, there's some good films coming up for Christmas time, which, you know, the movies do well, Boxing Day, big films.
Yeah.
And also for next year, a good film. Peter Jackson's come out with a film. He's gone back to his old style of
well, he's had three old styles.
Yes, but he's gone way back now to the Lovely Bones. I saw the trailer the other day. It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And there's things like The Informant, Wild Things. There's some good movies out at the moment and will be over the Christmas period.
Cat Chertow shits on the mall.
Thank you, Tony Martin, Consigliere Greg, Cecil Beta Hirsch. Thank you, Dee Dee. Thank you, Pablo. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everybody. Have a happy New Year, Merry Christmas, season greetings till we see you then. Remember, you're way better than I was.